What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Blue Wire.
What's up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Fay. No Jack Manuel. We got special guest Matt Brooks of Nets Daily. Matt, how are we doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on. I was delighted to see you pop up into my DMs and ask me to do this. We've been sort of sitting on this idea of working together, and here we are. So I'm excited to be on and talk a little bit of Nets. It's a good night for it.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you might be a good luck charm. Nets had a rare blowout of the season over the Suns tonight, 119-97 at home at Barclays Center. Matt was there. But before we get into it, quick reminder, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. Also, this episode is brought to you by Bet Online. But, Matt, I think we should start with Caris LeVert. Big-time performance, career night for him.
Yeah, so first off, didn't know his career high was 29. Which was cool to see. I feel like it like should be more than that in a lot of ways.
It feels like it should be 35.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, he really never had 33 at some random, you know, I guess like November game from last year, but there you go. I learned that it's 29. It was the classic resurgent performance that feels like it's like right after a really rough week on Twitter or Reddit or whatever have you. You know, it was one of those classic, like, go against the grain. Nobody really expects this from him. Everybody's like, you know, sort of treating him like he's almost like this eighth man that really doesn't have any trade value. And he comes out there, and it, you know, there were moments like that. The thing with him this whole last month is that, at least watching it game after game, I just have felt like that his first step hasn't been there.
Yep.
And tonight he was really getting by guys. Now, keep in mind, like, he wasn't defended by the most stout defenders. And a lot of the times he would be matched up like an Eli Okobo or somebody like that on the Suns, where he had like a clear height advantage. And just in that alone, he was able to abuse that matchup. But yeah, it kind of looked a little bit like the Caris of old. The herky jerkiness was working to his favor. And it's exciting. I mean, he's, you know, say what you want about him, he is one of the most exciting players on that Nets roster.
Yeah, I'm a big Caris guy. It was tough to watch him play over these last couple games with all the struggles, because he was getting to some of his spots and just missing the layups. But I agree about the first step, because tonight we saw him break down defenders without getting that pick or running the pick and roll. It was kind of able to work in some isolation situations. And then just finishing the shot, I think the confidence was there. I think he was a little bit more aggressive attacking the rim. But also, you love to see the 7 assists. You know, we've seen him have a couple good scoring games, but not the passing. The combination is what you love.
Yeah, and I felt like there were little inklings of him, you know, and I know this sounds like this is the most classic revisionist history type of thing, but I didn't see the Wizards nor the Bulls game live, so I wasn't seeing a lot of this real time. But I remember in the Sixers game, I want to say, what was that, almost a week and a half ago, he had this unbelievable late first quarter stretch where it was like, oh yeah, like, I kind of remember what it looks like when Caris looks comfortable and he's going downhill and things are working to his favor. And it was against a really good defensive team. So, I mean, it just, the difference for him, I felt like tonight, was that those little push shots that he does, where he's going off one leg and fading to his left, those are falling. And, I mean, those are hard shots to make. I don't know if that's something you can depend on night after night, but if he's at least making a decent percentage of those, he'll keep guys on their toes, and that'll turn into more, you know, wide open layups or even the mid-range shots if he does elect to start taking those. So yeah, really good Caris performance. I was very pleased with it. I think many people were.
Yeah, I agree with the push shot thing too, is because I think if he's not making that shot, they can kind of sit on his layup package, and we saw him get blocked over the last couple games. When he's a three-level scorer, that's when he's at his best, and we know the skill set he has. What'd you think of his defense tonight on Devin Booker? I thought he had some good possessions on him.
Yeah, I think he had some good possessions. I thought TLC was fantastic. And I don't always – I thought he was fantastic. I mean, you know, I want to say this was the end of that 10-day contract.
I believe so.
Some major mojo energy right there. The end of a contract is really when you're going to get, like, top-notch effort from – especially somebody like TLC who's kind of been on a couple of different teams. I thought he was good. I haven't been the biggest TLC guy throughout the entire run that he's been on the Nets, but like tonight I was looking at him like, all right, like I see what you're doing here. You're getting into the jersey, you know, you're full court pressing Devin Booker and forcing him into really uncharacteristic plays that I, you know, he's somebody that I expect Devin Booker to go off against the Nets with the way that they predicate their defense toward allowing mid-range shots, but they took those away. I thought that he was really fantastic. I thought Karras was good defensively. I definitely feel like I need to go back and look a little bit at some of those possessions because as the game continued on, I felt like he got more of those, and I feel like I need to rewatch that. But, yeah, I thought his energy was good, and it makes sense. He's scoring the ball well. That always happens. It's the NBA, man. Like, yeah. The guy's scoring, he's going to play better defense.
And for Karras, it's like when he's scoring, he's just so much more engaged in the game. And I thought, like, right. The Nets – as a team did a good job of disrupting Devin Booker early and just making his life difficult. So when it came to the third and fourth quarter, shots he usually knocks down, they just weren't falling. So credit to the Nets team. TLC, I thought he was feisty. 3 of 4 from three. I think, like, if TLC is going to have a role in this team moving forward, if he can knock down a three-point shot and just play with that hustle and energy, like you mentioned, picking up Devin Booker full court, any type of energy, the Nets lack that. So if you can provide that and knock down a three ball, you could probably get a spot on this team.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, I mean, especially as they're kind of, you know, eventually getting everybody healthy. I think that there is a role. Yeah, whenever the hell that happens. I think that there's a role for a TLC. But, you know, you're not going to get this every night from him, obviously. Yeah.
Talking about another guard in the team, I thought Joe Harris got involved early, and we saw a little bit of mid-range Joe tonight. I thought he hit every mid-range shot he took.
Yeah, I can't hold the I know that this is where Jack would be, you know, just absolutely positively out of his mind about the Joe Harris thing. I mean, this is two games now that we're seeing this from Joe Harris. You know, I personally had questions about, like, is this guy happy in the offense? Is this working with him? But Joe Harris has gone through slumps before. I mean, I remember him specifically going through a slump actually around the same time last year. I don't think it got to, like, the point of where he's shooting in the low 30s, but he was certainly going through kind of a swing of things where, you know, he's going to hit 50% some months, and then he's going to hit, you know, low 40s, which is still, by the way, incredible from a three-point shooter. Yeah. But, no, I felt like he got going. I've liked him from the mid-range for a while now. I've really been in favor, and I don't know if I've done a column about this, but I should. I just wish he would trade in a couple of, like, the line drives. He loves up and unders like no one else I've ever seen. And I just wish he would trade in a couple of those from the mid range. Cause when he takes those, like, 13 foot shots off the dribble, I just feel like they never miss.
And they're ever. Wide open.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they don't expect it. You know, I think there's a scouting report out on him. Like, you run him off the 3-point line, he's going to go into a sea of defenders and try to, like, force something up. But he keeps you on your toes, you know, as you just said about Karras, like, it being a three-dimensional scorer. I think it's a real thing.
Yeah, I like it for Joe, too. And, like, you see guys like J.J. Redick or Kyle Korver, as their careers continue, they need to have that mid-range shot. Those guys kind of already had it, but Joe needs to add it because I think teams have done a really good job running him off the three-point line. And we know he's not the best athlete, so if you have a quicker defender, they're going to probably be able to shut him out.
Right, yeah. J.J. Redick's got that, like, sweet baseline fader where he takes it from the short corner. He, you know, he's always, like, leaning towards out of bounds. I don't know if you can picture the shot.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm a huge J.J. Redick guy. Yes, yes. Yes, he actually smoked Joe Harris about 19 times last year in the playoffs doing it. So, yeah, he's that's a shot that I'd like to see. It doesn't have to be to the extent that J.J. Redick's leaning, but if he can have a shot like that that's reliable, I'd love to see it.
We're now going to take a quick break to tell you about our brand new sponsor, BetOnline. Missed your chance to bet on the Chiefs and Niners? Fear not. Blue Wire is excited to be partnering with BetOnline to help you win big no matter the time of the year. With March Madness, the Masters, Major League Opening Day right around the corner, BetOnline has you covered for your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Plus, it's never too early to lay down your future bet for Super Bowl 2021. Head over to betonline.ag, use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We signed it up. It's super easy. You're already making wagers. It's a fantastic way to support the podcast. Again, promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word when you sign up at betonline.ag. Bring your bets home with BetOnline, your online sports books experts. Now, talking about the other shooter on the team, you know, who's very inconsistent, but he had a stretch tonight where he really picked up in third quarter. Torian Prince, what did you think of his game?
I'm Mr. Pro Torian Prince right now. I have said maybe not the nicest things about him all season long. I think many people have kind of harped on his inconsistencies as a player. He looks comfortable. I've really liked the early makings of the chemistry that he's got with Kyrie Irving. Yep. And I think that Kyrie's done a really, really good job at involving him in the offense. And because of that, I think it started to carry over into some of these games. He just looks a lot more confident. Torian Prince is really funny to watch in person because the guy loves nothing more than a contested three, but he makes them. It's like the most insulting thing ever. Like, he really effectively took Phoenix out of a couple runs just by hitting threes in guys' faces off the dribble, and you're just like, all right, Torian Prince, do your thing.
That third quarter stretch, I think he hit like back-to-back threes, had like a steal and a layup or whatever it was. Yep. And I felt like sometimes he feels like disrespected, even though he's not that type of player, like where he should feel disrespected. They put Ricky Rubio on him, and I felt like at that point he was like, all right, I'm going to hit threes over this guy. He's, you know, 6'5" or whatever he is. And I'm 6'7", like, I got this. And he splashed. Like, you can always kind of watch Torian Prince when he shoots his three, and you kind of know if it's going to go in, even without looking at the shot. You can kind of just see his release.
Yeah, yeah. Just follow him on Twitter for 2 days. Like, he's definitely like a come from behind type of no one believes in me guy.
Yep.
Which is like, that's his energy. That's dope. Like, you need guys like that.
Yeah, he gives the Nets a little toughness. We haven't seen a lot of recently, but earlier in the year, he was getting texts. Well, he got a text tonight, actually. So
yeah, he did. But the thing I like about him is that he's been really active in passing lanes, just disrupting normal actions that I think that, especially you saw that tonight, that steal that you mentioned, like, that was just a normal action that I don't think anybody, you know, I mean, I think that the Suns were practically in autopilot, you know, running their set, and he came in there and dislodged it, and that's going to make a big difference. That'll stop an opposing run right then and there. That's the best way to do it. So
yeah. That's a play that the Nets got a lot of from Rodions last year. They could get a little bit more of that from Prince and LeVert. It'd be great. What did you think of the night from Jared Allen?
Jared Allen was – I thought that Jared was pretty quiet. So it's weird. I really don't like watching DeAndre Ayton, and I was definitely box score watching – by the end of in the fourth quarter, and I saw that he had 25 and 17. I'm like, God, I just don't remember one point of that. And I think that kind of, this is the matchup that Jared Allen doesn't really seem to always win. Ayton really reminds me a lot of Drummond. And, I think that if it seems like this year with Jared Allen, it's like, if he has a past or something like that with the player that he's going against, he plays really hard, but, you know, there are other games where I'm just like, man, I just feel like I wish you'd taken this one a little more personally. Like, this is another young center, somebody that I feel like effectively he could really neutralize the guy. I mean, DeAndre Ayton is somebody that I just loves jump shots. Like, that's the type of guy that it's like, man, I feel like you should win this matchup. This is actually might be one of your biggest strengths, is just forcing this guy into, you know, the long, like, set 15 footer on the baseline. But no, not tonight. Ayton was good.
I think Jared does this thing where he almost like doesn't respect his own defense, where like he could press him a little bit more. And I think he was letting DeAndre Ayton get comfortable early on. And he wasn't like in the post, he wasn't completely in the low post. He was just like has this little like jump shot / hook shot. And Jared Allen wasn't pressing him on that. And he was just kind of laying it in.
Yep, and he wasn't active on the boards. Like, that's the biggest thing that I think I noticed with Jared Allen. Like, that's honestly, like, it's such a stupid, like, you know, like, basic way to look at Jared Allen. But if he gets boards, I feel good about him. And if he doesn't get boards, I'm like, well, that was not the best Jared Allen game. But I do think it comes down to that. Like, you know what you're getting from him defensively. Positionally speaking, he's going to be really excellent. He'll roll hard. And, you know, if he's getting rebounds, that's kind of the X factor for him. So, you know.
Yeah, I think it's gotten to a point where Jared Allen, like, I don't think this was a bad game. It wasn't a great game. He still had a positive impact because of that defense he provides. And he does a pretty good job drawing fouls. I think it's a little underrated factor of his game where, sure, like, the Suns got caught grabbing him three or four times tonight.
Yes, yes. I totally agree. That's a. You've actually put this whole Jared Allen section way more concise than I have. you've carried this one for me. No, I mean, Jared Allen is not the most, like, glorious player to watch in a lot of ways, but yep. I do actually, weirdly enough, being one of the youngest guys on the roster, to me, he's one of their most consistent forces just because he has such a defined one skill in his rim protection. More defined even than, you know, some of the other guys passing or some of the other guys scoring. Like, I don't know. I've been a big Jared Allen guy for a while, and I've deservedly got a lot of crap for how much I've been a Jared Allen guy, but you know what you're getting from him, and I think that that's a big benefit for the team.
Especially at the age he's at. Like, he's so young, and there's so much of a ceiling for him. Sure. And I think the blocking is a great thing. The rim protection, like, guys are scared. The only guy who really had success driving on him at the rim tonight was Kelly Oubre, and he kind of flopped into him a couple times, but we'll save that for another day. Moving on to Spencer Dinwiddie, 14 points, 4-12 from the field. Not necessarily his best game, but it was enough for the Nets because Caris LeVert carried the load.
Yeah, I felt like he was kind of in, like, orchestrator mode. You know, like, it wasn't one of those Dinwiddie games where it felt like he was kind of, like, vying for reins of the offense.
Yep.
I think he, you know, Dinwiddie is a really, really good teammate. I think that is the biggest thing I've learned this year about Spencer Dinwiddie, is that he's somebody that's willing to shoulder the load of the offense. But tonight, I really felt like he was out there, you know, just seeing it first person, cheering for Caris LeVert, knowing that that guy is going to be a really important part of their future, whether he's somebody that's on the team or he's whatever, like, you know, a piece that turns into something. He knows that Caris LeVert playing well is really important. I think that those guys have they've been teammates for a couple years now. So I felt like, at least seeing it first person, I felt like there was a lot of camaraderie, and, you know, he's been really moving the ball well the last couple of games. I felt like it was kind of more the same from him, you know, bailing them out with that downhill bucket, getting the line, you know, for 6 free throws. I thought that was huge for them. And his free throws, as always, just, like, they come in the most clutch moments.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, end of the shot clock, and they don't really have a set or anything like that. And he's just able to somehow get 3 defenders to bite on him. I thought it was a good performance. It was, you know, and by the way, plus 24, not, you know, I know single game plus minus, I make fun of it all the time, but this is one of these times where the number is so glowingly positive that I think it's worth mentioning.
I think he gets a lot of credit for Joe Harris having a good game. You know, he got him involved great early point. And like you mentioned, you know, he let Caris do his things. And I think in the past, there's been times where, you know, they have the chemistry. They've been on the team, maybe the 2 longest guys, and they haven't necessarily, it was like a I'll go, you go type of thing, where tonight he was like, all right, Caris, you're hot. I want to see you get going. And like you mentioned, it's important for the Nets to see Caris LeVert play well, not only for this season or next season or in a trade package, whatever it may be.
Yep. Yep.
So, Spence, you know, we're lucky to have him. We'll see what happens with him in the trade deadline. I know a lot of fans are bringing it up. Maybe we'll talk about that later. Garrett Temple didn't necessarily pop in terms of the box score. Thought he had a couple good possessions on Devin Booker, but I just love him so much more in the bench role.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of indifferent on Garrett Temple personally. I mean, I think he's fine for like 15 to, he played 22 minutes today. And I would say anywhere from like 15 to 18 minutes is fine. Yep. I think that there was a possession. It was actually one of these possessions that Dinwiddie bailed out. I was dying. They had TLC bring up the ball, and then he handed off to Temple, who dribbled a couple of times, and then handed off to Dinwiddie. And I was like, yeah, this is like, this is where I don't really want to see those guys, is initiating the offense. But, I mean, you know, I thought he'll give him good minutes. He's somebody that if he's hitting his threes, he's effective on offense, and he knows what he's doing on defense. I wouldn't say he's, like, outstanding, but, I thought it was a solid Garrett Temple performance. You know, a 1-for-5 night from 3 is obviously not great. He had one move where he must have crossed over about 7 times in a row. I was like, all right, let's slow down a little bit here. partner.
You're not going anywhere either. Like,
yeah, like, I don't think you're taking this guy at the dribble. We know where you're going with this. So, but, you know, I mean, he kind of is what he is. I've learned not to get too high, too low on Garrett Temple this year.
Yeah, I think just like you mentioned, that 15, 18 minute, like in a smaller role playing with other good players, he sticks out a lot more in terms of being that role guy. But when you ask him to, you know, run the offense or kind of score on his own, it can be questionable at times. And I think, you know, getting away from the players for just a second, the times that I was a little concerned with the Nets is where Kenny was putting out a lineup where it was either just Spencer or Karras, and they were with TLC, Temple, Wilson Chandler, and DeAndre Jordan. And it just feels like it's a lot of pressure to put on Spencer Dinwiddie or Karis LeVert to carry the offensive load without at least having a Joe Harris or a Torian Prince to space the floor.
I mean, the thing about that is, like, you're not going to have that, like, fairly soon, at least by October of next year. So you're going to be, you know, staggering those guys with ideally a LeVert, a Durant or a Kyrie Irving. So, you know, all these lineups, like, yeah, like, again, like a Garrett Temple getting 22 minutes, like I can harp on that and be like, well, yeah, I probably wouldn't do that. But I mean, again, you're missing like 67 million dollars worth of talent. You know, if you're getting much of really anything out of some of these guys in between 20 to 25 minutes, you really can't be too mad at that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I just think I'd like to see Kenny stagger Joe and Torian just to give, you know, Karras and Spencer a little bit more space with that second unit.
Sure. But I mean, I think you run into that, but at the same time, it's like, I also am not super against that because, again, you might be putting those guys in situations where they have to create their own offense. And I think that was a lot of the reasons why you saw Joe Harris and Torian Prince slumping, is because you're putting these guys in situations where the shot clock is expiring and Joe Harris is trying to go downhill and he gets his shot sent into like the fifth row, or yeah. Torian Prince is doing I'd call it the fadeaway off the backboard shot that he's leaning away from like 12 feet out. Like, it's like, I get why, but I also am like, if you're going to play these guys together and they're playing well with their best guys, then maybe it's not the worst thing. And you just try to figure out those minutes and keep your head above water, I guess, the best possible, I would say.
Yeah, it's like you want to keep the good lineup, and then if you have a bad lineup, it is what it is. You don't want to kill your good lineup.
Right, just eat those minutes, essentially, and just pray.
Yeah, you're just praying that Karras or Spencer can carry you. And, you know, the other stretch, it was trying to ask Theo Pinson or Musa to carry you, and obviously, you know, LeVert gives you and Dinwiddie give you a lot better chance than that. But, Matt, anybody else on the team you want to talk about? You want to talk about DeAndre, Wilson Chandler, anything else on those guys?
Not really. I would love to see some Kuroks minutes. I will say that.
He instantly came in and popped. Like, you instantly felt Rodion's, even though it was garbage time.
No, I absolutely saw it. Like, he made a three, and he did, like, we talked about the Torian Prince. You mentioned even, you said that Prince got the Kuroks steal, and Kuroks came in and did one of his steals from last year where he's kind of near the elbow, and the team is sort of just, like, you know, getting into, like, almost like college offense where they're moving the ball along the perimeter, and he just, you know, gets that 6'9" frame in there and is faster than he looks and pokes his hand in there and almost gets a steal. So I'd like to see some minutes from him. I think in a lot of ways he could be kind of the X factor for what they need. He's another kind of like, I guess, like, supportive piece. He's not really somebody that you'd want to put in a situation where, you know, even less than like a Joe Harris or a Torian Prince, where you just really wouldn't want him creating his own offense. But I'd really hope that they give him another look. It really felt like they were doing that. And I that's pretty much all I have on, you know, the remaining guys. I'd like to see a little more Rhodey, but
yeah, no, Jack and I have advocated for that too. It's like every time he comes in, he just provides some type of energy. And I think it's not like, oh, you have to play Rodion's 20 plus minutes, you know, bring him in. If he's having a good stretch, leave him in. I want to say maybe it was against Washington. I felt like Torian Prince had a really bad game. Wilson Chandler wasn't really doing anything. I was like, all right, you know, throw Rodion's out there. See if he can give you a little bit of a spark, because these guys aren't doing it tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and like I think that, I mean, Prince is a total X factor a lot of the time. Wilson Chandler, you kind of know what you're getting. So, you know, if it is one of those games where it's like, boy, I don't know if Prince is really playable, because he's one of the guys, like I mentioned this about LeVert. I think Prince is one of the most like notorious, his offense feeds into his defense guys. Yeah. I would like to see some Kuroks minutes. And the nice part about him is that you can play him at small forward. So, like, if you wanted to size up and you wanted to play like a, you know, like a DJ, Wilson Chandler, Kuroks, you know, maybe LeVert, let's say Kyrie's back, Dinwiddie lineup. Like, that's a really large lineup that you don't usually see from Kenny. I think that would be interesting. I'm a big fan, especially when they were starting him at small forward. I know the returns were kind of mixed. Like, I feel like some games he really showed up, but I just like it as a different look. You know, like, the small ball thing is fun, and it's what a lot of the Nets brand is built off of. It leads well into three-pointers and obviously the type of shots that they're looking for, whether that be downhill or from behind the arc. But it's kind of fun. Like, I'm down to get crazy. This is the year to do it. Like, why not go outside of what has worked in previous years and see who pots next to who? I mean, this is basically an experimental year.
I agree. And I think, like, Kenny needs to realize this roster is a little bit different than the ones he's had over the last couple of years. There's a lot more playable players, and there's options to go big, where last season there was really no big option. You were never going to play Jared Allen and Ed Davis. Like, we've even heard the idea of maybe playing Claxton next to DJ for a little bit or whatever it might be. Like, just having the option to go long when you play a Philadelphia or even like an Indiana when they have all this size down low.
Right. Yeah, I think the problem was that they gave the Claxton thing. They probably did that a little too early into the season. And, you know, they did that like 10 games into his career. And the return.
And it was against good teams, too, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, like, they really put it in the worst situation. And I think Kenny, I'm not going to put words in the guy's mouth, but or thoughts into the guy's head. But, you know, I felt like they did that and it didn't work out exceptionally to the point where he was kind of out of their rotation because of it. And Kenny was just like, yeah, we're not going to do this. We're pulling the plug on going small ball.
He's like, I gave you guys a chance and it didn't work, so now we can go back to what I want.
It's like, all right, Moose, you're playing the four tomorrow.
That's literally probably it, too. Like, it's so crazy. Matt, any thoughts you want to get out there on the trade deadline? Anything that you think is going to happen? Any spicy takes?
I need to – this is good, I guess, warm-up for me to think about the trade deadline. I want to look at and see – I'm going to go through all 30 rosters and see if there's anybody that really sticks out. It's kind of been a really strange deadline. I feel like in the last 24 hours, there have been so many names listed to the point that 2 weeks ago, there was like nobody named. It seemed like it was going to be a quiet deadline. I would just say, like, in terms of who the Nets have been over the last couple of years, they have been relatively quiet at the trade deadline. That's not really, you know, Mark's, there are so many things about him that, screams San Antonio Spurs, upbringings, but I think his pattern at the trade deadline is the most Spursian of all, where he's not really going to do too much. It'll be like a fringe rotational guy, but you never know. There's a couple guys even on the Suns team that I'm like, you know, Mikal Bridges, I saw him listed somewhere today as available. I'm like, wouldn't be the worst piece for the Nets. Like, you know,
yeah,
kind of an interesting, really long arm guy that I personally could see myself buying into. Of course, his jump shot is flawed beyond belief, but That's somebody I would look into a little bit. But I don't have anybody yet. And I don't think that it'll be like a key guy that gets moved. Again, I've said it since probably about like September that there's no point in moving anybody yet because you just don't know who's going to pop next to Durant. And you don't know how these rotations are going to look. You know, we didn't even know who was starting at center coming into the year. Like, we didn't know if it was going to be a Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan starting. How are we going to know what the starting lineup looks by, you know, February of 2021? I mean, it's just, there's no point in I'd say diving too deep into it. And honestly, like, other than Dinwiddie, I don't think anybody really is at peak trade value right now. Prince is starting to get going, but if you look at his raw numbers, they don't look good percentage-wise. Joe Harris.
And his extension kind of prevents him from being traded.
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, you literally can't trade him or LeVert, but let's say in like a perfect world, you could trade these guys. You're trading LeVert at basement value. Joe Harris is a free agent next summer. I guess he could be somebody you'd look to deal, but I don't know. I'm in the camp of like, take it easy. Just see who you can get going. And again, just build on it, assuming that Kyrie Irving gets back into the lineup, see who he plays well with. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I've been pretty much the same way all season long. I think why trade a core piece when you don't know how they're going to fit with KD? Much as you know this team as is a championship team. I'm not saying I agree with that, but yeah. Until we see them on the court, you know, they could really pop. Guys could fit so perfectly. Like, we don't know what even KD's going to look like, how good sure. he's going to be. Sure. And like you said, it would probably be a smaller move. You never really know with Sean Marks, but if I expected anything, it would probably be just like bench depth or maybe a slight bench upgrade, but nothing that's going to make anybody kind of get happy.
Right on. Yeah, of course. And like, I mean, you know, we can sit here and nitpick their roster and be like, well, you know, they, and I've said it, I've said they probably need a 3-4. I still am kind of in the camp that it would be really nice if they had a Brooklyn version of like a Royce O'Neal or somebody like yeah. that. But at the end of the day, like, you're going to add somebody that could be that I would expect to be like a top 10 player in the league. And you're adding that to a Kyrie Irving and everybody else. And assumptively, some of these guys really, really play well. Ideally, all of them do, but you at least get some of them playing well. And, you know, for the most part, they, systematically speaking, what Kenny runs on defense really works. They've been a top, you know, effectively a top 12, top 10 defense basically since January of last year. And I think that's because of their analytical system really does work. It's not always fun to watch guys bomb mid-range shots against them and sometimes see those go in, but it does work. I mean, the numbers suggest that it works, so. I would remain stagnant, and I would just let the talent come in and flow in. And, you know, if it is too many chefs in the kitchen, like I've wondered in times past, that's when you'd make a move, you know?
Yeah, and I just always keep thinking about, like, yeah, there's so many guys driving, but they're kicking out the players who are missing. Just imagine that guy's Kevin Durant.
Sure, like, yeah, or Kyrie. I mean, yeah. It really felt like before – you know, really before Kyrie got hurt, it felt like, I mean, just watching some of their half-court sets, they were kind of running Dinwiddie and Kyrie off each other. So they would run, like Dinwiddie around these like double screens along the perimeter that would traditionally be run for Joe Harris, and those were looking good. You'd run Kyrie kind of around like a screen right near the basket. I really felt like they were figuring things out. They just need everybody there.
It's tough.
It's going to be the trademark of this year is just getting everybody on the floor.
Yeah, they have a healthy roster that can finally find some chemistry and get in sync. Like, if Caris LeVert can play well, Spencer Dinwiddie can play well, and Kyrie Irving can play well at the same time, you know, that's going to be huge for the team. But, Matt, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I just wanted to thank you for having me on. Definitely a resurgent performance from the Nets overall. I up there, it's been a couple of really, really great feel good wins. And, this was a good one. It was nice to see some different characters really come up for them. And I think that's the biggest takeaway for me.
Yeah. It was nice to see Caris LeVert return. Matt, pleasure having you on. Definitely look to get you on again in the future. Big thanks everybody for listening. Like I mentioned earlier, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods.